Welcome to the Republican National Convention.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives.
Featuring the real-life soap opera of Vice Presidential candidate Alaska Governor Sarah Palin and her family.
This is MacDonald Carey, and these are the days of our lives.
And proving that truth is stranger than fiction. The hits just keep on coming. Oh, yeah. Tonight, in St. Paul, Sarah Palin accepts her party's nomination to be their vice presidential candidate. Can it get any more surreal? I'm Nicole Sandler. Welcome to Radio or Not for this Wednesday, September 3rd, and I appreciate you tuning in. There's a lot of territory to cover today. Last night, actually, Rudy Giuliani was supposed to be the keynote speaker at the convention, and I was so looking forward to counting all the 9/11 references. Yeah, it could have been a fun drinking game. You know, take a shot every time Rudy says 9/11, but he was canceled. You know, message to James Dobson, be careful what you pray for. Because, yeah, he's the guy, Focus on the Family guy, was praying for rain for last Thursday when Barack Obama was speaking to 84,000 people at Invesco Field. Yeah, well, the rain came a little late in the form of Gustav, which thankfully, you know, didn't cause much damage, was sort of a petered out hurricane, but just enough to throw a damper on the proceedings in St. Paul. You know, I got to tell you, getting back to the soap opera topic, the Republicans, they are the family values party, right? Isn't that how they bill themselves? Well, this is, here's the soap opera that is the Republican Party right now. You got George W. Bush. He himself a dry drunk, right? An alcoholic with some questions as to whether or not he's been hitting the sauce again. And the questions about whether or not Laura is actually sleeping with him in the White House or at the hotel there where she was staying. They've got two daughters who were drinking underage and a niece convicted for stealing prescription drugs. That would be Noelle Bush, daughter of our very own Jeb. Oh, I'm so proud to be a Floridian. Then you got Sarah Palin with a 17-year-old daughter who got pregnant at 16, right? Dick Cheney with a gay daughter, McCain with a wife stealing drugs and a history of rehab, and of course, his history of cheating on his first wife, well, you know, dumping her because she was disfigured in an automobile accident. Oh, it goes on and on and on. I read a blog comment from a reader who said, I'm loving watching the Republican convention. They provide entertainment. Yeah. Yeah, it is a soap opera. There you go. We'll get back to what's going to happen tonight at the convention in a little while. But last night, I was invited to be a guest on Mark Germain's web radio show. He broadcasts or webcasts every evening at 11 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio1.com. And on today's blog at radioornot.com, I will put a link to the show we did last night. And he asked me to join him on his program last night to talk about Sarah Palin, as well as Joe Biden's visit to South Florida yesterday. And we'll get to that in a little bit, too. But yesterday, when I was railing against Sarah Palin and actually talking about the comedy element that is her, her candidacy, I neglected to play some really funny audio that I have, which was Cindy McCain speaking about why Sarah Palin is such a great pick.
She is heavily experienced in what she has done. She started out like everybody else, member of the PTA, small government at home, then a mayor, now the governor. She comes with the kind of experience behind her, and also, by I might add, a son who is about to deploy to Iraq. She comes with way more experience in it.
What did you tell her about that? Because, of course, you have a son.
Yeah,
serving.
I did. I asked her. How do you feel about this? Are you, this is things you have to do, is not only possibly be a vice presidential candidate, but also, you know, listen and worry about your son. And she looked me square in the eye and she said, you know something? I'm a mother. I can do it.
But she has no national security experience.
You know, the experience that she comes from is with what she's done in the government. And also remember, Alaska is the closest part of our continent to Russia. So it's not as if she doesn't understand what's at stake here. It's also about making decisions and being targeted in what she thinks. She has a great mind, and she has a very serious direction in where she goes.
Alaska is the closest to Russia, so that gives her foreign policy experience. And she has a targeted mind? What? What? Is she kidding? Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, last night, John McCain was supposed to be interviewed by Larry King on CNN. However, the McCain camp pulled out and said, John McCain is not going to go on CNN because your reporter, Campbell Brown, went over the line when she was questioning McCain's spokesman, Tucker Bonds. And this is something that my friend Mark Germain brought up to me on the program that we did last night. So I went back and found the audio. When I was finding the audio, I found this little rap piece from Wolf Blitzer, who was explaining that John McCain backed out of a scheduled interview he had with Larry King, Mr. Softball Question, if there ever was one, because of the treatment that Tucker Bonds got at the hands of, that bully, Campbell Brown.
All that and a lot more coming up. But first, we have this note for our viewers. Today, Larry King was scheduled to interview John McCain, and CNN was supposed to run excerpts of the interview during our primetime coverage. However, a senior McCain campaign advisor tells CNN the interview has been pulled because of a segment CNN ran last night during Campbell Brown's election center. The segment was about Senator McCain's running mate, Governor Sarah Palin, and it involved this portion of an interview with McCain's spokesman, Tucker Bonds.
Can you just tell me one decision that she made as commander-in-chief of the Alaska National Guard? Just one.
Yeah, she has made any decision she has made as the commander of the National Guard that's deployed overseas is more of a decision than Barack Obama has been making as he's been running for president for the last 2 years.
Okay, so tell me. Give me an example of one of those decisions. I'm just curious. Just one decision she made in her capacity as commander-in-chief of the National Guard.
Campbell, certainly you don't mean to belittle every experience, every judgment that she makes as commander of the National Guard.
I'm belittling nothing. I just want to know one judgment or one decision. Well, I would love to know what one decision was. I'm not belittling anything, Tucker. I'm really not. I'm curious.
As she makes a decision as to how to equip, how to command the National Guard of in Alaska,
those are the Pentagon's decisions. That's General Petraeus.
That's my only argument.
No governor makes decisions about how to equip or deploy the National Guard. That, you know, when they go to Iraq, those decisions,
Campbell,
are made by the Pentagon.
Campbell, on a factual basis, they certainly do. In Alaska, if you have any sort of emergency, as things are happening in your state, the National Guard is under the command of the governor.
Not in Iraq, though, you dummy.
Than Barack Obama has ever had. I would argue that on our ticket, John McCain and Governor Palin, between the two of them, have far more command experience in the military than either of the candidates on the Democratic side. And I do want to argue that this is about the top of the ticket. Ultimately, when people go into the ballot box and decide between Barack Obama and John McCain, they're going to decide between John McCain's record of reforming Washington and Barack Obama's rhetoric on the campaign trail. Doesn't have a lot of experience, certainly has no military experience, no command military experience, which both of our candidates have. That's an important distinction. I think voters will make the right call in November.
The McCain campaign said it believed that exchange was over the line, and as a result, the interview scheduled for Larry King Live with Senator McCain was pulled. CNN does not believe that Campbell's interview was over the line. We are committed to fair coverage of both sides in this historic election. You can see the entire interview, by the way, at CNN.com. We hope Senator McCain will join us here on CNN in the very, very near future.
How absurd is all of that? All right, so you heard Wolf Blitzer's rap at the end of it. McCain cancels his interview with Larry King because they thought that Campbell Brown's grilling of Tucker Bonds was over the line? What kind of nonsense is that? Okay, so on the day that it's announced, John McCain backs out of an interview with that tough interviewer, Larry King. Barack Obama agreed to, I have a hard time saying this, but I will without trying not to throw up in my mouth, as Stephanie would say. Barack Obama announced that tomorrow night he will go on Bill O'Reilly's show on Fox TV. Sorry, the taste is just bad. You know, what is, look at the contrast there. How awesome is that? Now, tomorrow night, I'm actually going to go see Kathy Griffin, because I'd rather have that kind of comedy than the comedy I'll get on watching McCain speak at the convention. But, you know, that's why God invented TiVo. I will TiVo it. I will watch it. As I have to talk to you about it, with you about it, hopefully Friday morning, right? Ay-yi-yi. And of course, I will TV. I cannot. I don't think my TV will allow Bill O'Reilly on there, but I'll make sure it does so I can TiVo and see Barack Obama go up against Bill O'Reilly. It should be an interesting one. So that's tomorrow night at 7, and I guess McCain then at 8. Now, did you see the joke that was George Bush speaking last night? For the first time in like decades and decades, a sitting president has not been at his party's convention in person. Yeah, you know, they didn't want him there. And he was relegated to under 10 minutes. He did not even speak for 10 minutes, and it wasn't during the prime television time. Nothing like saying, we're proud of our president. Yeah. Tonight we will have Cindy McCain. And I swear, tomorrow, I think I need to compare and contrast Cindy McCain speaking with Michelle Obama's speech, because there's no comparison between the two, really. And tonight, of course, Sarah Palin will speak. Oh, this should be interesting. You know who's writing her speech? The same guy who orchestrated the smear campaign against John McCain in 2000. I honestly don't get this guy. Now, speaking of vice presidential picks, Barack Obama made a very wise choice, in my opinion, by choosing Joe Biden to be his running mate. And Joe Biden was in town yesterday. He did a town hall meeting type of thing at Century Village in Deerfield Beach. It was hosted by the Deerfield Beach Democratic Club. Now, I've done a lot of work with them, and Bernie Parnas, who's the president, is just a wonderful man who's sort of like my surrogate grandfather. It was for him and that club that I moderated the debate among the Democratic hopefuls for the sheriff's office, right? But anyway, so I went up there. But because I don't have access to my old email, I'm not getting a lot of the notices about things like this. So I was unaware that Joe Biden was going to be in town. And this was all put together in 48 hours, apparently. But I got a phone call. What day is it now? On Monday afternoon, from this very hot guy that I've come to know recently, who said that he found another excuse to call me, and that was that he had just gotten an email saying that Joe Biden was going to be in town, and you know, another excuse to see me sooner than our next scheduled date was to ask me if I wanted to go see Joe Biden speak. Now, how perfect is that? You know, not only like a very cool guy, but inviting me on a date to go see Joe Biden speak? Okay, my kind of guy. Anyway, yes, we went. And Joe Biden was every bit as impressive as I hoped he would be. So I was able to get a copy of the audio. And Joe Biden was introduced by a woman who was a child survivor of the Holocaust. And there was a whole group of them sitting right up front. And Joe Biden talked about, well, how he became really educated as to what happened then. And he mentioned his friend, the late Representative Tom Lantos, who, as you know, was the one member of Congress who was a Holocaust survivor.
Tom was my chief foreign policy advisor for 5 years. Before he ever ran for the United States Congress. And Tom was the guy who literally educated me in a way that I thought I knew from a historic perspective. I thought I understood. I was raised by what you would call a righteous Christian at my father's dinner table, literally, not figuratively. It was a place we gathered to have a discussion and incidentally eat rather than to gather to eat and have a discussion. And my father was one of those folks when I was growing up as a kid in the late 40s and early 50s who railed against our failure to act in the 30s. My father was one of those who taught me you do not have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. My father was a man who was... And although I thought I knew, and I, from an academic standpoint, thought I understood the Holocaust, I never fully grasped it and understood till I walked back through Tom Lantos' shoes. You remember Larry? He took me back to Hungary. He took me back through. We searched for Raoul Wallenberg. We spent a lot of time. Although I don't want to embarrass him, one of the smartest guys I've ever worked with, who heads up the foreign policy, the foreign policy committee for me, and was in the national security apparatus of the Clinton administration. His father was ambassador to Hungary. His stepfather. And his name is Tony Blinken. I don't know where Tony is. I'm going to embarrass him. But Tony's here. And his stepfather was Samuel Pizar, the youngest known survivor of Auschwitz. And some of you may know Sam. He was a very, very prominent guy in here and in France now, and as well as in Israel. So I have been surrounded by people who've educated me. And, I know it sounds corny, but the truth of the matter is... one of the things that have driven me is this notion that never again can happen again. It all depends on us. And a lot of people thought it was a little bit severe, but when each of my sons are a year and day apart, if you watch the Democratic Convention, you heard from one of my sons, but my other one's even brighter. The only drawback was he went to Yale Law School, which I don't count as a law school, but Only kidding. But all kidding aside, when they each turn 15, and they turn 15 a year apart, or a year and a day apart, we call them Irish twins where I come from, people thought it was a little severe, but I felt so strongly about it that the first stop, literally, the first stop, we flew into Hamburg, changed planes, and went to Munich, and literally got in the car and went to Dachau. Their first experience and exposure. No, it's not, I don't say it for applause. I say it to let you know where my heart is and how strongly I feel about this. It is not a joke. It is not anything to do with, had nothing to do with politics. I wanted them to see. Because as every generation passes, it's harder and harder and harder to understand the enormity of the outrageous sins that were committed. And it even is harder for people to understand that if we remain silent, there is no guarantee it won't happen again. And you've seen it happening now, although Jews have been the victims of it for 5,000 years. You see it happening in other parts of the world. You see it happening in Darfur. One of the reasons, as both my colleagues will tell you, I, as they say, was so insistent with President Clinton that we act in Bosnia. Is that I saw it. I knew of the rape camps. I saw what was happening to Muslims in Bosnia. And ladies and gentlemen, genocide is genocide is genocide. And if we remain silent, it will happen again and again.
Well, at Century Village in Deerfield Beach, he was a guest of the Deerfield Beach Democratic Club. About 800 people was the estimate I saw in the papers, and very well received. And Joe Biden, as you can tell, gave a very personable speech. He then took some questions later on, but I'm going to play you some excerpts of the speech. And he does get back to the question of Israel because, well, you got to consider the audience. He's speaking in front of a crowd of people in Century Village. You got a lot of retired Jews down here. And you know, if you're down here in Florida, you've gotten the emails. The emails about Barack Obama and questioning his support for Israel. And, I told a story on the air a few months ago in the middle of primary season. In fact, it was Super Tuesday, and I'm in the studio after my show, and I've got the TV monitors on with the sound down. And this girl, a coworker of mine, walks in the studio and sees Barack Obama up on the screen. And she says, "I can't believe that Schwartz is going to be president." And I looked at her. I was like, "Excuse me?" And she's like, "Hey, Obama, you know, he's a Muslim and he hates the Jews." And I just looked at her. I'm like, "Where do you get this stuff?" "Well, you know, have you seen the emails?" The problem is that is, you know, the mentality of most people out there. Now, this woman is my friend. May not be the brightest bulb in the chandelier, but she just doesn't know any better. So of course, I educated her, and she's done a 180 on Obama. Her husband still hasn't, and, you know, it's very sad. So I think one of Joe Biden's tasks yesterday was to assure this audience of mostly retired Jewish people that Obama is there with him. And we'll get back to that. But, you know, another part of his speech that I particularly liked, especially as the mother of a nine-year-old, was this part. It's Joe Biden speaking yesterday here in South Florida.
One of my best moments at the Democratic Convention, people asked me, how are you and Barack get on? I don't know whether you observed it, but there is real chemistry. It's not a joke. It's real. And between my wife, Jill, and Michelle. And by the way, next Republican or right-wing guy tells me about Michelle as this angry woman. Listen to that speech of hers. Yes, now I can tell you personally about her. But you know, the most incredible night at the convention wasn't Barack's speech, wasn't Hillary's speech, wasn't my son's speech. It was literally as we were taking off for the second night of the convention. My granddaughters go from age 15 to age 3. And as we're leaving for the convention, and you know, Michelle and Barack have these two gorgeous, gorgeous granddaughters, our daughters. And as we're leaving, my little Finnegan Biden, that's a common name down here, I know. Finnegan Biden, that's her name. Beginning, middle, and end. Finnegan Biden. She better turn out to be smart and beautiful because she's going to have a tough time with that name. But anyway, Finnegan comes up to me with Barack's oldest and says, Pop, can we have a sleepover? And I swear to God. And so I said, you know, honey, you have to ask your mommy. And I said to Finnegan, I said, it's good by me. So we cleared out one of the rooms. They brought in mats in the rooms. They brought in pizza. They brought in soda. And to see my four granddaughters with Barack's two daughters made me realize again, and this is no malarkey, folks, as they say where I come from, why I'm running, why so much is at stake. I wouldn't say this in an audience normally, except that I know how you are about family. I know you know what I know. I know you know family's the beginning, the middle, and the end. It's simple, it's profound, and it's real. So, you know, seeing them play was amazing. But as I said, that's nothing new to anyone in this beautiful room. The fact of the matter is, there's a lot of things we share in common. And a lot of things I want you to understand that you share in common with Barack. You know a lot about me. I've been around for 35 years, good and the bad. But the truth of the matter is, there's not enough people who know enough about Barack. And I want to tell you something. One of the things I found in my community growing up, in an Irish Catholic community, in the Jewish community, has been the heart and soul, literally, of my support since I have run for public office, for real, no exaggeration. One of the things I found and we value above everything else, dignity and respect. We know what it's like not to be respected. Beginning with Holocaust survivors, but for all of you in this room, you know that the most, as we say in my church, the cardinal sin that can be committed is to strip someone of their dignity. And ladies and gentlemen, I promise you, Barack Obama, put yourself, my mother has an expression, walk a mile in my shoes. Walk a mile in my shoes. This man understands what is the driving energy in our community. He understands the word dignity and respect. And an awful lot of people aren't being respected these days. And it's not the salary we make, it's the dignity of the work we do and whether it's treated with dignity.
Oh, he got that right, didn't he? Joe Biden speaking yesterday in Deerfield Beach at Century Village, and to a very receptive audience, you know, an audience mostly made up of retired people, of a lot of Jews, and so he did speak a lot about Israel. A couple of questions he answered. I'll get to those in a little bit. First, I mean, this was here's what Joe Biden said he really wanted to focus in on.
I want to briefly talk about national security, the security of Israel, and putting security back into Social Security and retirement.
Okay, so on the subject of Social Security.
The fact of the matter is that with regard to Social Security, let me just state simply our position, and there's a long record to sustain it. One, and I'm not looking for applause line, but I want you to understand where we are. No privatization, no raising the retirement age, no benefit cuts, no income taxes for any senior making $50,000 or less, and some long-needed reform, which we'll not have time to speak to at this moment, but long-needed reform for long-term care. My mother's 91 years old, and she lives with me. Like an awful lot of people in this country, a lot of people can't afford to have mom or dad live with them. They're struggling just to make it. And a lot of people who reach my mother's age have nobody.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing. I didn't know his mother lived with him. Boy, Joe Biden, the more I know about him, the more I like him. So that was on the subject of Social Security. Here's what he had to say about the security of Israel.
The second thing I want to mention is Israel. As Dana mentioned, you know where my heart is in this one. My first trip as a senator abroad was to meet with a woman I admired and was more excited to meet than anyone. The only two people, only other person I was this excited to meet was Nelson Mandela. It was Golda Meir. I went over as a young senator in 1973. The Egyptians, because I think they thought I was young and didn't know anything, let me be the first American to fly into Cairo and get in an automobile and drive to the Suez Canal, which they had occupied. They had closed. And after that, I went to meet with Golda Meir. And I sat in front of, many of you have been in her office, the Prime Minister's office, those blonde double doors you walk in, a relatively small desk, and behind the desk, Golda had all these maps. She loved to flip the maps up and down while she chain smoked. And I sat there for several, I don't know how long, but a long time. And sitting next to me was a guy that really impressed me, first by his silence, and second, when he spoke, by the depth of what he had to say. And the guy's name was Rabin. He was then in the Army. That's how I started my firsthand, you remember, Norman, my firsthand education about Israel, the first time I had been there. I have known every single prime minister, and most of them very well, since that time, nine, since Golda. And I was one of the people, as a young upstart, who fought like the devil to prevent the sale of F-15 and AWACS to Saudi Arabia. Remember that back then, some of you? This may be the only group who remember what I remember. I also fought, as my colleagues here have, the sale of sophisticated weapons to Arab states. I was the original co-sponsor, along with your two congressmen, for the Palestinian Anti-Terrorism Act, which banned direct U.S. assistance to Hamas-led Palestinian Authority. I was one of the people who, as I remember, who was the only one of the people who would go on television to defend Israel and the first need to invade Lebanon when the use of cluster bombs occurred. And no one else, let me remind you, no one else, no one else in the United States Senate spoke up. And I have been a strong voice, as both Debbie and Robert have been, on talking about anti-Semitism. I've held extensive hearings as a U.S. senator. People saying, what are you doing that for, Joe? Again, silence. Silence breeds abuse. I went to Europe when NATO was being expanded, including Poland. I made a major speech, Krakow University, with all the intellectuals in that country, in that room, so desperately wanting to join NATO, which I strongly supported. But I said one thing. I said, how you treat the Jews among you. Because remember that big debate going on about Auschwitz and about the nuns and the rest. I said, to me, is a defining issue of whether or not you should be admitted to NATO. Now, the reason I tell you all this is not to brag or talk about what I've done. I want to remind those of you who, tell those of you who don't know me and those of you who do know me, what my record has been. It has been unstinting. in the defense and support of Israel. As I said to Debbie, my support starts in my gut and goes to my heart and then to my brain.
All right. Joe Biden speaking yesterday. I was enthralled. I thought he did. He answered all the questions he needed to answer. He spoke to the audience that was in the room. So a lot of his speech was about Israel and his support for Israel and the fact that Barack Obama is right there with him. Now, he mentions Debbie and Robert. Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Robert Wexler were both there. Now, if you've been listening to my program, if you're new to the podcast and didn't hear me on the air here in South Florida, then you don't know. I had sort of a little, falling out with Debbie Wasserman Schultz. See, both she and Robert Wexler sit on the House Judiciary Committee, which is the committee that should have been holding impeachment hearings for George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and other members of this administration. And Robert Wexler agreed. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, however, has always been in line with Nancy Pelosi and very vehemently against impeachment proceedings and hearings. And we, you know, we've argued about it, and we argued about it on the air a number of times. And, you know, I think we had sort of a falling out. Well, I saw Debbie yesterday before Joe Biden spoke, and I went up and, you know, talked to her, and she had heard what happened about me losing my job and felt that it is somewhat a travesty that there's no longer a local progressive voice being heard in South Florida. Because not only am I no longer on the air, my predecessor in my old job who went on to another station, Jim DeFede, remember, after I took over mornings on that station, Jim went to WFTL and did an afternoon show over there. Well, he's also gone, this time of his choosing, because he was just in a bad situation there and he wanted out. But the bottom line is, both of us were silenced basically on the same day, the same week, definitely right before the Democratic convention. So there is no local voice on the airwaves here in Florida. So I'm talking to Debbie about the situation. And, you know, I told her about the podcast, and she said she would love to come on. And she said, but don't be too hard on me. And I said, I won't. But, you know, we still need impeachment hearings. And she laughed. But, you know, the one thing I did say to her was, you know, I hope that when Obama and Biden get in, that they will hold this administration accountable for the numerous crimes they've committed. And she did her typical, she said, well, you know, they have to get in first. And I said, yeah, okay. So later on, I'm going to play you one more piece of audio from Joe Biden's speech. But afterwards, I'll play you a question that I was going to ask, except somebody else asked it for me. We'll get to that after this final piece on from Joe Biden, from his speech, anyway, in which he, I'll just let you hear it for yourself.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. I am the fifth most senior member of the United States Senate. I would not have given up that job to become vice president of the United States of America, which is a fine job. But it's vice president. It's a fine job. I would not have given up that job. And you all can't look me in the eye, but these guys know when I give you my word as a Biden. I would not have given up that job to be Barack Obama's vice president if I didn't, in my gut and in my heart and in my head, know that Barack Obama is exactly where I am on Israel.
All right, so there you have it. He made it unequivocal. Never know how to say that word correctly. He is. All right, so Joe Biden. So then it came time for the Q&A segment, and I did raise my hand. But, you know, he had a number of questions from the audience about different things, healthcare, and Bernie Parnas, the president of the Deerfield Beach Democratic Club, who was the host club for this speech by, or town hall meeting by Joe Biden yesterday, got up and asked this question.
I'm not going to say yes, we can. I'm going to say yes, we will. Okay? And when we do, I'd like to know if you guys are going to pursue the violations that have been made against our Constitution by the present administration and restore the Constitution to its rightful place in our society.
Yes. Now, look, here's the deal. My colleagues can tell you, particularly Henry Waxman. One of the things that happens is, you know, there's a phrase in the law, those of you who are lawyers, sometimes you're stopped from being able to pursue something, meaning you're failing to have act in the past precludes you having the right to act in the future. We will not be stopped from pursuing any criminal offense that's occurred. Now, here's what's happening. Patrick Leahy in the Judiciary Committee and Henry Waxman from California in his Oversight Committee, as well as John Conyers in his Judiciary Committee. What they're doing is they're doing the right thing. They're not making false accusations about anything. They're not making unfounded accusations. They're collecting data. They are subpoenaing records. They're building the file. And they're going through it, and we'll go through it with a fine-tooth comb. If there has been a basis upon which you could pursue someone for a criminal violation, they will be pursued, not out of vengeance, not out of retribution, out of the need to preserve the notion that no one, no attorney general, no president, no one is above the law. It sounds trite.
This woman doesn't sound trite at all, and that was so the answer I wanted to hear. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was sitting about three rows up in front of me and to the left, turned around and looked at me when Joe Biden gave that answer, like, see? Okay, just what you asked me. We're going to do it. We're going to do it. And I felt very good about that. So as soon as I'm done here, I will call Debbie's office and set up an interview with her to be on radio or not. And maybe, I mean, who knows? We'll see what her schedule is, but hopefully sometime this week. All right. Of course, Joe Biden was asked about Sarah Palin.
Because the press has been asking me that question. I've not answered it for two reasons. Number one, first of all, I don't know the governor. Everything I know about her, there's no reason not to respect her and believe she's qualified to be the vice president. I'm not going to make that judgment. That's the people for you all to make. I'm being completely honest with you. I know people worry about Biden style answering the question, but the truth is, I simply don't know. And I take her on face value. She's a governor. That's no mean feat. And she seems to have a strong personal story. With regard to the stuff you're talking about, I have a simple proposition. Children are off limits. Children are off limits. And as my mom would say, we should treat each other. And in this case, we've all been through things with our children. And it's about common decency. Just treat people with common decency. That's all I know that I can say. And I don't know anymore, quite frankly, at this point. I'm sure I'll know a lot more before it's over, but I don't know much more about her positions on the issues than I've heard. Yes.
All right. Now, I'll wrap up on the subject of Sarah Palin, where we began, because Sarah will be speaking tonight, accepting, funny, her party's nomination for to be their vice presidential candidate. Unbelievable. But here's the thing. I respect what Joe Biden and Barack Obama are both saying, that children are off limits and should be for them. But guess what? You and I can and should still raise questions when there are questions to be raised. Now, yesterday I kept hearing all the Republican pundits who are struggling to lavish her with praise, and they spoke about how her daughter Bristol chose to keep this baby and marry the father, and how brave Sarah Palin was to keep her infant child, even though she knew she had the amnio. She knew that this child would be born with Down syndrome. And what a brave choice that was. Excuse me? If Sarah Palin has her way, there would be no choice. A mother, a working mother with four children who finds out she's pregnant with a fifth with Down syndrome would not have a choice whether or not to carry that pregnancy to term. Guess what? Even a young woman who was raped and the product, one of the byproducts of that rape happened to be a pregnancy, would have no choice as to whether or not she keeps that baby. Yeah, they're talking about choice? The anti-choice party? The party who thinks that they proclaim to be the party of family values? Well, let me just throw this out to you. I say they're not the family values party. I say they're the family hypocrisy party. All right. Sarah Palin speaks tonight. Should be an interesting one. We'll talk about it tomorrow right here on Radio or Not.